That's how we own it.
What's up, y'all? I'm your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, My Son, the General.
And we are your host of Street Politicians, the place where the streets and politics meet. There's a lot happening, as always. Every week we get together with plenty to talk about. This week, we're talking about Atlanta for everybody.
For everybody.
The entire country.
Everybody.
The entire country.
Everybody.
Is depending on Georgia.
Listen,
right
man,
now.
It's serious, man. Like, everybody's been talking about the presidential race, and people have convinced people to go out and vote, you know, and now it's so crucial.
Right.
It's so crucial. This Senate race is really crucial. It's actually a runoff.
Yeah.
You know, because there was already an election, and then the votes were really close. So this is going to decide who controls the Senate.
Right, which basically controls the entire game. And I have this constant battle back and forth with our followers or whatever we call them.
Yeah.
They debate us all the time.
That's why I love my followers. I tell people, you can't come into my comments if you ain't strong-willed and strong-minded.
Oh, your comments are beast.
Because they tear you up.
They fight. But, you know, I see people in the comments all the time who are like, oh, well, you know, now you got Biden, so now what's going to happen? See, I told you he wasn't going to do this right, and I told you it was going to be this problem and that problem. And I'm like, we always said we knew that. Like, I don't understand what part people
I think
missed.
For me is it's like I get it, because you know we when we look at history, you know, we need to be leery, we need to, you know, question everything. But the man ain't even in office yet.
Yeah.
You know,
but he's making decisions.
He's
right
making
now.
Decisions, but bottom line is this. What I want to say, I didn't want to cut
no,
you
it's
off.
Okay.
But the decisions he's making, right? Even if you don't love all of them, you gotta say that as it pertains to Black people, it's already better decisions being made for Black people than have been in the previous administration.
So, you know, I mean, absolutely. There's definitely a difference in the tone, the posture, and an understanding of a commitment that the president-elect, Joe Biden, knows that he has to be committed to appointing people of color. Obviously, the appointments of women have been incredible. There are many. But still, we have to be heavy-handed when it comes to what we want early on in the process. And your whole thing about, well, you know, he hasn't really gotten in office yet. But the thing that folks have to understand is that the decisions that are made right now set the tone for what the next 4 years will look like.
No, and I respect that and I understand that wholeheartedly. And that's why when I said that I was looking for a better opponent, I actually meant it. So what happens is, what most people are looking for is actually still an ally. Because the things that we are asking Biden to do is what an ally would do. Mm-hmm. And you're expecting him to do this.
Or what a president would do.
No, not a president.
To do what's right.
No,
because we're not asking him to
you're
just be our friend.
Yes, you are. You're asking him to put the people that you believe should be in office on most of the levels. And the reality of the situation, I never expected him to do that. I had no expectation that Joe Biden would put in at least 7 or 6 out of the 10 people that I thought he would put in. I thought maybe 2 or 3, and I would fight the rest of the administration.
Yeah, but the fight is not about that's one piece of it, who is appointed to different positions. That's mm-hmm. only one part. And yes, we have to fight for that. But the real issue is the policies that they put in place. And so, for instance, like in education, the Secretary of Education, I'm hoping that is someone who maybe graduated from an HBCU or someone who understands the challenges that our children specifically face. And I'm hoping that they will also incorporate some type of task force that helps that secretary to be able to understand our issues and helps them. Somebody like Cora Masters Berry should absolutely, since she works with young people so much, these are women who I believe need to be a part of. And of course, Black men need to be a part of the leadership from the education department, because there has to be a change in the way that public education currently works for our kids.
I don't understand how the policy can be decided.
I'm going to tell you how.
If we haven't even got who the people are. Mm. If you got an administration that puts people in office, right, and we're pushing the administration, the people that they put in office going to push them. So the reality of the situation is, like when I said, we haven't
Well, it depends
yet.
Because we have to be clear about what we're saying. It's not putting people in office. It's appointing people to positions within the cabinet and within the administration, mm-hmm. which is different from putting people in office. Dealing with the situation in Georgia, the Senate race mm-hmm. is putting people in office. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a different thing, well, right? I mean,
and what ultimately just giving a person a job.
Right, but okay, so to your point about how policy can be actually shaping right now within these first 100 days, generally what happens is that an administration goes in saying, these are our priorities, these are the things we're going to get done, these mm-hmm. are the policies that we think we can push within the first 100 days, we're going to do these things. The people that they appoint are generally people who understand the priorities and will help to get it done. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work in the opposite direction where those individuals come in and then figure it out. And that's why you heard James Clyburn, the congressman from South Carolina, who was really responsible for helping to bring Joe Biden back from what was not about to be where we are now. He was basically out in terms of the Democratic primary process. And James Clyburn said, I think he was on Breakfast Club, where he was saying he wants to see in the first few days, not even 100 days.
He said first 100 hours.
Right, first 100 hours. Exactly. Because he understands that those things are being shaped now. That's why groups are meeting with the administration. They're getting ahead of the day after inauguration so they can make sure that their issues are at the table on the menu, if you will. To be clear, there are things already on the books, right? So like mm-hmm. George Floyd, the legislation around him that has no-knock warrants, that can be passed if you have a Senate and a Congress that are on the same page. So it's not the first 100 hours, of course, but in the first 100 days, things can actually move.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that it's not just about appointments, because appointments are cool, but it's also about influencing the actual agenda that is on the table and making sure that they know that there are certain things that we are not going to in any way capitulate around. To the point that we have been talking about, when do you use your leverage? Do you use it before an election this close when you have two Republicans who are nuts? Okay, Kelly, what's her name? Loeffler. This is a crazy person who should not at all be in the Senate.
If we get all of the people that we think should, and the black men, and no more deputy positions, and we are in control, then that would be something far beyond what I ever thought would happen. I just think that the people who thought that would happen may be disappointed. I'm saying I'm not disappointed because I never had any expectations of that at all. So when I was saying that I was really just fighting for a better adversary, I really was fighting for a better adversary. If they do these things, what they become is allies. I don't think they're allies. I don't think they're going to do most of the things that we're talking about.
I definitely, you know, and to go back to that point, I definitely do not feel that we're looking for allies because...
But if they do these things that we're talking about, at those points, they become allies because they've done the things that
No, I don't think that it's being allies.
So what do you think?
I think it's being smart politically, and I think that it's also being committed to the base that put you in office.
That would make you an ally.
No, it doesn't.
If you committed to a base that
put you...
So what does it make
you? I think it just makes you... It's like saying that a corporation... that they're our friend just because they're catering and to the black community. No, it's
a good business.
It's a good business deal for you to do business with our communities because we spend the most money.
Yeah,
and so it's a good political move for you to support
to
the
be
community.
An ally.
No, I don't know about that.
If you support me, then you're an ally. No, doesn't. The thing is this, you think the job is something different than I think the job is, obviously. I think their job is to uphold the system. I think anybody who gives a little pushback and gives us a little leeway into the system is somebody that's just a better adversary. They're no allies.
Yeah,
so
and
based
that's
on
what I'm
saying. What you're saying is putting black people in positions of real power. I never expected them to do that.
And I'm saying that, well, I don't know about that because Kamala Harris is in a position of real power.
All right, but that's what I'm saying. And that alone with something I voted on. I said, Kamala's going to do things. And I said, underneath that, there are going to be a few people that we know from our communities, from out, you know, in special arenas that we've dealt with, that we can have conversations with, that we might be able to push a little further. But I never thought that this administration would do all the things that people are saying, well, you need to do this and you need to do that. And I get it because they do need to do it. I just never thought they would.
Yeah, I still don't think it makes them allies, but I think it just it means that they're doing their jobs. I'm not looking to pat anybody on the back and say you're my good friend or you're my good ally just because you did your job and also because you did
that you think they should do. Right?
But that's what I'm saying is anything outside of that is that you're not doing your job properly and you're playing political suicide. That's my opinion. I don't think it makes you an ally.
But what I'm trying to say is this. If we voted, right, and people said none of them was good, right, and we said none of them was good, right, it's because we already assumed that they wouldn't do the things that
that's not what I'm talking about. I think what's happening is that we're focusing in this conversation on the Biden administration, and I'm not actually talking about that anymore when I am now trying to figure out what's an ally versus a person who's just doing their job. So I'm not even thinking, the administration, cool, I get what you're saying, but I don't believe that someone who chooses to put in position the people who help to put them in position makes them just an ally. I think it means that you're doing your job, that you're doing what's right.
Okay,
so allyship to me, and even allyship is whatever, goes much further than just doing the right thing to me.
What does it mean? So why do you say it's the right thing? So my thing is this.
I think, let's talk about allyship for one moment in that context. Let's talk about it. I think saying that a person, let's just say a person, a white woman says, well, I will never call the cops on black people just because, unless somebody's actually got me in harm. But I would never call the cops on a black person and just because you walk down my street and I feel nervous. I'll never do that. That for me is just doing the right thing.
Okay.
It doesn't make you an ally. What makes you an ally is if you see someone else doing it and then you get involved and say if I'm a white woman, to my white sister, this is not okay with me. I don't believe that you should be doing this. That's stepping into something that you don't have to deal with because that person may have done nothing for you. They may never have. It's a total different thing. In this situation, black people put you in position and therefore you appointing black people to positions of power is just the right thing to do. It makes sense from a numbers perspective.
Okay, so what I'm trying to explain to you, if you put the same scenario you gave, you said somebody calls the cops and says, I won't do it, right? If he puts anybody in office right now, that just will do good things for black people, right? Just they're not black. If he just put liberal people who believe that racism is against the rules, that it's not the right thing. If he puts a whole cabinet full of people that don't look like you but have your same agenda, it's just doing the right thing.
Yes.
Okay, so what I'm trying to tell you is when he goes a step further and just says, you know what, I'm going to put black people in these offices that probably are going to go above and beyond just not hurting black people. They're going to help black people. That makes you an ally.
I guess. We'll just move on from it. Yeah, but, you know.
How about that?
I don't know. But speaking of allies versus not allies and calling the cops versus not calling the cops, it brings me to my thought of the day. You see? Thought of the day. That's my thing. You know, I see there is a slew of indictments happening out here. There are a lot of artists, rappers.
Mainly rappers.
People. Mainly. Not just, I mean, yes. Mainly rappers. But I'm also seeing like a lot of indictments. The hood, a lot of people getting arrested.
You got Casanova just got a federal indictment.
Casanova.
You got G Herbo just got an indictment.
That okay. I think
and you got A Boogie just got caught with a gun.
And not only are there a number of people being indicted, but there's a number of rappers being killed, right? I've been seeing a large number or increased number of individuals on my social media who are being killed. And so my thought of the day, the question I have is, are artists and entertainers being targeted, or are they just doing things they shouldn't be doing that's either getting them indicted and or killed?
I think it's a combination of both. I think when you look at where we are, when you look at this pandemic, I was having this conversation. One of my friends called me last night and he's like, yo, somebody wants you to do this for some money or whatever. So we was having a conversation. He was like, yo, it's really hard out here. Mm-hmm. He's like, yo, I haven't had like a real job. Like he does management for different artists and do connect. He said, I haven't had a job since 1997. I have to figure out, I need a job. Mm. He said, the things that people are out here doing for money is different now. He said, I tell my friends, don't walk around with big chains because they shooting your head off. Yeah. He said, every time I turn on News 12 or this and that, somebody's getting killed, somebody's getting robbed. When you look at the severity of times and you see A Boogie got a gun in his house, somebody might try to kill A Boogie. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And he might not understand the legal ramifications or figure out how to do it legally or might not be able to get a gun legally. You know, when you look at, they say G Herbo was swiping and do a leak. He might not be making no money. He's trying to figure out how to survive. He have a lifestyle that's probably he's amassed before the pandemic that he still has to live up to. He still has bills and children and things of that to take care of.
Innocent.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. he's probably innocent. Casanova. You know Casanova.
We know Casanova's innocent.
Exactly. Cas been innocent. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, so when I look at these is good people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And Cas' whole thing was, yo, I'm trying to stay home. I'm not letting nobody get me in trouble. I watched them duck beefs when all these people were trying to stalk.
You know, I was upset with him about the whole, in the beginning of the pandemic, he had the whole
with no mask
thing
on.
Where it was like no mask and they were having a video shoot. And I appreciate how after, because you know, I sent it to Charlamagne and you and Erica called him. Yeah. And I was like, somebody needs to tell bruh that this is not cool, because he had a lot of young people out there. And the way in which he turned it around and was like, hey, I thought about it. This is not what I'm trying to do. People need to be safe. They need to wear their mask. You know, it was almost immediate. It's not like he went, I thought he was going to go online and be like, who's this so-and-so talking such and such to me? But he didn't, you know, he actually cleaned it up and got it together. So, you know, I don't know whether people are doing wrong or not. I can't make assumptions. I'm saying everybody is innocent just because
what I'm
going to
say is that
if
you're innocent or not, man, you got to keep yourself out of harm's way, man. Yeah. You got to do as little as possible, man. You got to surround yourself by people who want to see you do good.
Yeah.
Because at times, you know, a lot of people around you are not where you are. And mm-hmm. you got to just accept that. You can love somebody, but sometimes you got to love them from afar.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to look at the situation and say, I cannot jeopardize my life, my freedom, my career, everything I've worked for, you know, for situations that don't make sense. And if you are innocent, then you got to fight the best you can.
Fight. Well, and look at Grandmaster Jay. I mean, this is yet another situation where police in Kentucky are saying that he pointed a gun at them or something like that. And, you know, while I saw that on our co-founder, Angelo Pinto, attorney Angelo Pinto's page, he said, we didn't see eye to eye with Grandmaster Jay, but what they're doing to him right now in terms of trying to indict him around the guns that other people, like, I just be trying to understand why white people could do stuff that black people can't do.
Well, it's a lot, you know.
Just to finish the point. Mm-hmm. So they say that he pointed a gun at officers or in the area where officers were. So they felt like their lives were in danger. And I know in Kentucky, you can have a weapon, but you can't brandish it and actually point it at people. So they claim that he did that. Now, I'm struggling with that, because even though, again, we didn't necessarily see eye to eye about working together, but I feel like Grandmaster Jay and his team did a lot of work to try to keep people safe. Like, they were really careful with making sure they coordinated with law enforcement, making sure that they talked to people about keeping their guns down and all of that, and especially after the incident happened where, you know, a gun went off during a time when they were in Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So I find it really hard to believe that he was just out there swinging his gun around in front of police officers.
I, you know, I don't understand how it happened. It seemed as if he understood he would be a target. You know?
Right.
When you heard him have conversations, he said, yo, what I'm doing right here is very dangerous.
Yeah.
My life could be in jeopardy all the time. I know I'm a target. People who doing what I do usually die. I would think that he would be more cautious. I don't know exactly what happened, but I hear what they're saying. You know, but we know through history shows you that when you lead movements like that, especially when there's a potential of said violence, that you know, when you take up arms mm-hmm. against this system, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to find ways to get rid of you. So, you know, you all the best to the man, man. We, you know, I hear there's a GoFundMe.
Yeah,
like, people are trying to get him out of prison.
Well,
you know,
he's not in prison.
I'm in jail. I'm sorry.
And the GoFundMe is for his legal fees, and so Freedom will be supporting.
Definitely, man.
To make sure that, you know, we stand
because
with
what,
that
what it is that the NFAC represented mm-hmm. is something that's needed.
Oh,
absolutely. We need Black people who are legally coordinated
exactly.
and understand that they're a militia to protect,
right.
you know, those who can't protect themselves. So,
right.
you know,
and when they come for you in the morning and
they come for me at night.
So we definitely will be supporting Grandmaster Jay's GoFundMe and making sure, hopefully, that he has the right legal representation.
He's going to need it because these people play, especially
they
out there in Kentucky.
Kentucky. They play dirty.
But it's a federal case, so. It's, you know, it's different.
Listen,
but
in Kentucky, I don't know who's who. I can't tell the feds from the state. You can't tell a city from it's all messed up. Kentucky is really, really a place where, I mean, the entire country just needs an overhaul.
Completely, man. So
just needs an overhaul.
So much love.
To all those who
are out there on the front. Be careful, man.
Yeah.
You're being targeted, you know. Being a part of Until Freedom, being leadership of Until Freedom, we understand that every day, man. And you have to outthink this system because they're constantly trying to figure out ways and loopholes to keep you entrapped. So
absolutely,
be cautious, man.
And, you know, that brings us circling right back to this election and how the entire country is depending on, it's like democracy is depending on 2 Senate seats.
Yeah.
I don't agree with everything that John Ossoff and or Raphael Warnock, which, by the way, Raphael Warnock is a good friend. And I still don't agree with everything they say and some of their ideology.
Anybody.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't.
That's impossible.
So this idea that we have to be equally aligned on every single point in order for us to work together it's not possible. And again, if you're running for, this is why people ask me all the time, will you run for office? Well, you know, I'm not running for office because I do a much better job, I believe, with in my position and for our people being an outsider who's able to agitate those who are inside. But I believe that there are people who need to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we argue with our friends, Jamani Williams, who's the public advocate in New York City, Assemblyman Michael Blake, State Senator Brian Benjamin. I mean, we could go on and on. City Councilwoman, who's now hopefully gonna be the borough president in New York, in the Bronx in New York, Vanessa Gibson. We argue with them all the time.
About their
positions. We want them to be more radical. We want them to lean harder. We want all of that. And sometimes they make sense about why it's not possible. But then sometimes we walk away and say, you just you're being trash today. Like
yeah.
you're just not
and
doing the
them,
job. And
know?
We push them and that's okay. And that's why I'm not running for office anytime soon, probably never, because I want to be able to push from the outside to make change happen. And I don't want to use the nice words. I'm saying defund the police.
Every time. So that's what we are. That's what the streets are talking about. The streets are talking, why do we have to have this runoff? Why is the Senate seat important? Why do we need to be involved, engaged after we went through all this process to put this president in
office? We
got to
vote
like,
again.
Why? You know, and what I keep telling them is, you know, when we look at Obama's administration, you know, and we were happy that we had our first Black president and we had all these expectations, a lot of people who didn't understand the process of the presidency and of the Senate and of Congress and all those things looked at it as Obama didn't do the things
right.
they wanted him to do.
Right, right.
And I explained
right.
to them the reason why a lot of those things that you and I both wanted to be done weren't done is because Obama did not have a Democratic Senate. You know, and a lot of the laws and policies he wanted to pass,
right,
Mitch McConnell had vowed that he would not pass anything because the Republicans weren't in control of the Senate. So we
were in control of the Senate, right.
That's what I said. They were in control of the Senate. So we are in threat of having the same exact thing happen now.
Again. Right.
And if we do not win these two Senate seats, we're going to have hell trying to get policies and laws passed throughout the Senate.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And that's why the entire country,
everybody, everything is on the line.
Is at the mercy of people in Georgia voters, young people. I think they said something around 20% of the electorate that helped to get Joe Biden elected in Georgia, which is flipping the state from red to blue, mm-hmm. which is a big thing.
That's a big
thing. That 20% of the electorate were young people and a diverse group of people, not just black, but just young people in general. And so those same young people have to go back to the polls. While we were out canvassing a few weeks ago, I saw that somebody had a sign. I forget which organization it is. It might be like the Georgia Bell Project or something like that. They had a sign on their door knockers because, you know, when we walk up, some people, they already have some signs up there. And it said, vote again.
Again.
Period. Yeah, that's big just
again.
It.
Again. Giant again.
And people are like, what you talking about? We got to vote again. We just voted. Yes. By January 5th, not on January 5th, yes. Because early voting is happening right now. January 5th, mm-hmm. you have to vote in the Senate runoff elections. Period, point blank.
No, it's not optional. There's no options. There's no choices.
Absolutely.
You have to vote. If you are in the state of Georgia, your vote is required.
Yes, it is necessary.
It is mandatory.
Yes, right. And that's what the streets are talking about.
That's what the streets are talking about. So, yeah, man, please, I don't care if you're from Georgia, but I need you to call your Georgia cousins, mm-hmm. call your aunties,
right.
call your friends and tell them that they have to get out and vote. Because this, when they say vote like your life depends on it, this is what they're talking about.
This
because
is what
it really
talking
does
about.
Depend on it.
So, and it makes our job easier. Because we know, again, we're going to have to fight Joe Biden. We already know that. We already know we're going to have to press
that's
Kamala
right.
to make her press the president. We already know that. And in order to accomplish any of these things, mm-hmm. to your point, you need a government that is in your favor,
right.
if you will. And right now, if Kelly Loeffler, that crazy woman,
Lord,
that robot,
that woman.
If she gets to make decisions.
Now, I'm not scared of many things. But that lady looked, no, for real, she looked like she really could be like in a horror film, like.
She just
like Carrie or something. I'm looking at her and it's just one stiff look into the camera. There's
well,
no
you
emotion.
Know, they say that a part of her There's not no... moving around had to do with a little cord that they say she may have been wired. You know, they'll probably never really look into it because, you know, you can't catch it later.
It's just so,
but
it's so scary.
It looked that way in, you know, some like, I don't know. I don't even know if it was like real news, but I think
it was
just real news.
It's just really scary. Just looking at this woman, she just looking into the camera and she just.
Speaking of looks. I'm on the cover of Violet magazine.
Oh, please. No.
You make it like it was such a big deal.
No, I was looking, right? From here, I couldn't like really see. And I was like, because I'm, you know, I'm doing the show. I'm in show mode. And I'm like, this looks kind of like Tamika and it's kind of up there. And I couldn't really see. So, you know, we got to show the audience.
Yep.
You know
I'm
what I'm talking about?
Violet.
She on the cover of Violet.
I hate, you know, how
you know?
I look every time on everything.
She's on the cover of Violet doing her thing.
Yep.
So talk about this. Talk about it.
I'm on the cover of Violet.
What is like, I don't know about it. Well,
it's a
like
fashion
me,
magazine.
Okay.
And in this particular issue, I'm on the cover and it's talking about our issues, talking about my activism and our movement. And a lot of brands wanted me to wear their things. So inside, I think I have Chanel and
Chanel,
Miu Miu, and a bunch of different people.
Let me go,
okay,
a
all right. We can do that
look.
Later because you know how I feel about
nah.
You know how I feel about.
We're going to look at a couple of these pics. We're going to put you on the spot.
No,
okay. Okay. Good trouble. Look at that. Good trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So
good, me.
Thanks. Okay. Okay, thank you. All right. So, but anyway, this is pretty cool. Our director, Kat Trigg, had a copy when I came in the door. So,
dope.
Mia, our stylist, had the copy for me, and it's kind of cool.
It's dope.
So, you know.
Congratulations, man. We appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
So if you're just listening, you can just go to iWomen.tv and you can see this wonderful magazine that Miss Mallory has graced the cover of.
Yeah. With my braids.
With the braids.
The braids. Between you and Angelo, man. And all the brothers around me.
It's the braids for me.
All of y'all love the braids.
It's the braids.
And, you know,
for me.
And I was saying the other day that the bun on top of my head, the little bun that I wear.
Yeah, the bun that went famous. That went viral.
This was the biggest year for the bun my life. Braided up, cornrows going up into a bun. Listen, I might have to go back.
That melanin magic, man. You know, go with the melanin.
I might have to go back.
Gotta go back.
Because this hair every day, we need to do a show on Black women and our hair. Everyone does shows on that, but we definitely have to talk about it. Because I am depressed when I have to do my hair. It's really depressing. It's sad.
It's not anything.
It's not a thing that you care about.
I mean, know about. Not so much care, because if I knew about it, maybe I'd care, but I just don't know.
Yeah, you don't understand the process.
A man get a little shape up, outline, he good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's like, it, how man. Come? God just made things a lot more simple for y'all.
I just think that we care less. Because most men don't. There's some guys that actually care about their hair, and they do all types of things to it. It's just
they don't have, look, we're seeing people like, nope.
It's dudes out here that get their little beeswax and they go get twists and all. I'm just never going to do that.
Yeah, dreads, but it's still not that. The they same thing. They can still get up and keep it pushing. Y'all can keep it pushing. For us, it is a full production. And people say, well, why are you wearing a weave, right? Like, how come you got all that? Why don't you wear your own hair? They have those people who say that for the most part. Now, of course, they are women who are natural, who try to encourage other women to be natural, but they also understand very clearly why we aren't natural. Men who often say, well, you should need to wear your own hair, sis, you know, get into yourself. Those are brothers who have never had to deal with what it's like to try to work out, right, with your own hair, to get up in the morning and you're getting ready to go somewhere. You take off your scarf and your whole head is freaking twisted, okay? And you need to be on TV in an hour. They have no idea.
I guess.
So anyway, and our next guest knows all about my hair troubles because she also deals with the same things. My girlfriend, a strong, bold Black woman from Atlanta, who
Melanin
is the
Queen.
Director of the Mayor's Office of Film and Entertainment. You know, she works with Keisha Lance Bottoms. I have to say that I saw, you know, I know that Mayor Bottoms is a very passionate Black woman in her own right and very strong. But I also have seen the work that Philana does to help her understand what's happening in the community.
We need those.
Really
grassroots.
That's right. It is super important today that our segment on the work, not just the work that's happening in Atlanta, but Philana understands what's happening across the country and also how important this particular election is.
That's right.
Let's talk to Philana Williams.
Before we go to the next segment and have our special guest join, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors.
That's how we own it!
Philana!
Hi, guys. Hi, Tamika. Hi, my son. Thank you guys for having me. And I would be remiss not to say what an amazing job both of you are doing. Like, it takes a village. It truly does. And, you know, I'm doing the hard work in Atlanta and in Georgia, but you guys are going around the country and doing some real, real work. And everything, we are so appreciative, the country, our people, so appreciative for all that you both do.
Well, we truly appreciate you, man. I have a special place in my heart just watching the transition that you made from just the entertainment, you know, understanding what the entertainment is and being an entertainer and being in this industry for years and just seeing how you transition and you utilize the power, you know, and the influence that you had in the music industry.
Still have.
Not taking that away, because you're still powerful. Have. You still one of the people, but how you utilize that and transform that power and brought it into these political spaces to move the needle and engage this culture. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah. Falana, tell us about that. Getting these artists and entertainers to actually participate in the political process, and why make the shift anyway?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, guys. Motherhood was one of the reasons. I woke up one day living in New York, hustle and bustle of New York. You guys know that hustle. And two kids, and the world was changing. And I wanted to make a change. I've always loved Atlanta. I love New York for the hustle, but as a mom, I knew that Atlanta was a better place for my kids. And upon moving back shortly after that, I was still in the music business. Donald Trump became the president. And I knew that I had to do whatever I could to help change that trajectory. Because I knew that if we did not shift in 2020, he would be our president again. And a lot has happened over the last 4 years. I just couldn't imagine our country with 8 years of Donald Trump. So I'll be honest, that's one of the main reasons I made that shift. And, you know, a chance encounter with the now mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms. I've actually worked on her campaign and she won. It was a very hard fought campaign with 14 candidates, and quickly transitioned into her administration at City Hall. And then onto the Biden-Harris race, and now, you know, working hard in Georgia to get Warnock and Ossoff elected as our two Georgia senators that represent us at the White House.
Well, I want to say, to see someone like you with such an extensive resume, who has so many connections with major artists, who've been in, you know, so many rooms, to make that transition to say, I'm going to utilize these connections I have. I'm going to utilize this skill set I have to show the connection, to make that, you know, that bridge between the community, between politics and these artists, and show them how they can have these voices. Like when you said, LeBron, they need to be heard. You know, we need to have T.I.'s voices. And you are that conduit that connects both of those people, you know, just shows how it can be used. You know, we're very grateful for the work that you do, you know, the career you've had, and how you continue to move the needle and push the culture forward. You are one of the culture shifters in what this movement needs right now. So we want to say we appreciate
you. And speaking of all of these artists, I can think of a time, you know, I know you, Falana, for a while. So I know when you were like running around, working with artists, you know, and really deeply just in the entertainment world. And Miguel was one of the artists that you worked with that I know of the most. And I know you also work with Mariah Carey. And I remember watching you navigate Miguel's career and helping him to speak to important issues, but yet still allowing him to be who he is. And I think a lot of times that's what artists worry about.
That's right.
That once you try to bring them into politics or social causes, that then they will either be judged, which they always will be, or that people won't accept them, and that they'll have to change who they are and actually in order to be able to fit into those spaces. And I've never seen you being that type of leader, if you will.
Yeah, and you know, it's, and thank you for that, both of you. I think everybody has a gift. Like, I can't sing like Miguel or Mariah Carey or dance like a Ciara, but I think that I have an innate gift to understand the insides of a creative or a creator. And you know, they're very complicated, unique people. And to make them comfortable in their own skin, and just to realize the power that they have. I think oftentimes they don't realize that power, and that's a God-given gift. But just to know that music is only a portion of who they are. And I think, you know, just knowing how much they may influence, and their words may influence that person who, you know, we can talk about a lot of things that might be on the brink of depression or suicide. Or now when we talk about politics, just how much their vote really matters. And I think one of the things I often say is, in what entertainers have to realize now is that there can't be a middle ground. I think our country is getting to a place that if we don't use what we have to really get our communities and people to vote and to participate in politics, do their part, then we're doomed. Like, the Republicans will keep coming and keep coming. Mm-hmm. And I think they're stronger in another way. They don't have what we have. They don't have the culture. Like, we have the culture. And if we artists have to realize that there's no waiting, and you, and it's not even about picking a party more so than standing up for issues and standing up for what this country has to become. Because if we don't, if the country doesn't quickly pivot, we're going to be in trouble. So, you know, artists and entertainers have to start being on the front line. And, you know, I do feel like it's, you know, I was built, and my entire career path led up to this moment of me being able to take that influence. You know, even in my own right, I had to really step up and say that, you know, I gained the respect of a lot of entertainers, and I had to take my part and do my part and be responsible for helping to lead them into the political realm.
So listening to you, you know, I get a feeling of where I felt, what I felt, you know, in this industry, being an artist and starting out in music and then transitioning into this realm. You know, I felt like fulfilled. I felt like I had a calling. I really identify with that. And I just want to say that we really appreciate you, man.
Yeah,
you
know, Alana,
we really appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you.
And the energy that you bring. Energy is so important. You know, a lot of people don't understand that. When you walk into a room and you bring a certain amount of energy, it's contagious. It makes people want to be involved. So when you go to these artists and you talk about politics and you talk about how it's important and you give them, you know, this energy that makes them feel like, I can do this. Because that's when you talking to us, I feel like, yo, I'm inspired. I get motivated just hearing you because you believe in what you do so much.
I look forward to us winning this race, but I don't think that everything that we're doing in this moment is about winning just one race. I think it's about rebuilding or building a platform and a time when we stand together, when we work together, and when we start to see one another as being responsible for the community. And I think that that's what's happening now, is that people are starting to come back home, if you will, and say, you know what, we've got to take care of this house and take care of our family. So you keep leading. And in Georgia, we intend to win. Are you having a party? Because in Georgia, y'all don't have COVID.
Ain't no so COVID
parties,
out there. Parties.
There's people getting together. I can't believe Georgia.
Georgia's out there.
Well, I'll have a virtual party, guys.
Okay. Yeah, because she's responsible.
You're going to be responsible. Yeah.
Oh, the mayor's definitely trying to keep us COVID-free and COVID safe. So
yeah, but it's so important to have a governor and a mayor who are working together, and you can tell that there is a clear distance between, or division between, a woman who is trying to keep people safe and a governor who is following the Trump playbook and, you know, and is just not focused on the safety and security of all of these folks who are gathering. I'll say this as the closeout. Keisha Lance Bottoms, Mayor Bottoms, as a mayor, you can see the level of disrespect that people have for Black women in positions of power. Because, you know, for him to originally try to sue her to stop her from keeping people safe and trying to keep people alive is absolutely asinine. And you can see it across the state of Georgia, that people are not taking seriously enough this COVID-19 crisis. But I know you are.
It could be fear, but I also think, I mean, it could be, you know, disrespect, but I also see fear. You know, when I look at Mayor Bottoms, I think people fear her because she's not afraid. She's one of us and she's from the culture and she's not afraid to take a stance, and not, she may not be doing what is politically the best thing to do, but she is going to protect the people. And she usually, in a lots of times, she stands on her own in her values and her principles. And, you know, I think that scares people that she just won't go with the status quo. And, you know, it's even in Atlanta, I mean, as you can see, you know, she, you know, there was a lot of resistance in her putting her foot down and doing what was right for people to keep them safe. And, you know, we can all look at the numbers and to see where we are right now. But I do want to say, I know this is not a political platform for me to talk, but I would, you know, I wanted to end by saying
this is street politicians. This is street politicians.
Any kind of platform you want to be.
Whatever you need to say.
Okay, good.
If you're looking for a husband, we talk about that.
Yeah, if you need somebody to slide in your DMs. We get you some DMs and all.
Listen, we were talking earlier about black hair and the challenges, the struggle that we as black women have with black hair and how people just don't get it. And I said that my girl, Falana Williams, understands black hair.
I understand. And these political times are really hard, which is why I'm slick back. At least I can do that.
A
but
good
hey,
slick back.
At but least no, you got edges. Guys, Falana, you have edges and you have a whole slick back situation. You know, a lot of people don't have that.
You're right. I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm thankful. But I do want to say that, you know, this is much bigger than just these two Senate seats. But these two Senate seats are very important. They're very important, not only for Georgia, but for the country. A lot is at stake. Our country's on the line. I think the trajectory of what's going to happen here is on the line. We need these two seats to tie the Senate. In the case of a tie vote, the Vice President of the United States is the tiebreaker. The Vice President of the United States in January will be Madam Vice President Kamala Harris, and we want her to be that tiebreaker for us. But we see how serious this is because, as we just discussed, and in the example of Mayor Bottoms, there are not many people who stand up for what's right. So I do expect for a lot of votes to be all Republicans going one way for their platform and for what their agenda is. And, you know, the Democrats will go the other way. So that 50 to be tied is going to be tremendous for the next 4 years. So it's bigger than Georgia. Healthcare is on the line.
Everything. So much you can't even get it out.
You can't. You can't. Healthcare, jobs, police reform, all of that is really on the line in this election. So anybody watching this, if you live in Georgia, please vote. If you have family in Georgia, tell them to vote. If you don't think your vote count, yes, it does. You know, this election in Georgia was decided and it came down to 12,000 votes. So it all matters. So, you know, and then moving forward, like voting is not a once in a 4 year thing. Voting is something that you have to do every year. There are important elections all around the country in every city every year. We have to vote like we go to football games and classics and celebrate Thanksgiving. It has to be like something that's deeply rooted within our communities. That's right. And it has to be a ritual. And I think that we as a community, you guys said this too, we have a lot of work to do with, you know, educating our people. Like we matter. We really, I don't care what anybody says, we really matter. We, first and foremost, we got to know we matter.
Right.
And we can make the changes. We just have to know that we can. And the last thing I would want is to see us so divided as a community and as a people that we don't show up in the numbers and have, and with the strength that we show up with now. Just vote, guys. Georgia,
vote.
Early voting
vote.
Starts December 14th.
Vote.
Yeah. Right. Early vote, mail in your ballots. You can still request a mail-in ballot. January 5th is the final day to vote. That is the day of the runoff. Reverend Raphael Warnock, John Ossoff, those are very important seats. They speak for us. They represent us. We need them, and we need to make sure that we give President-elect Joe Biden the best chance possible to, you know, follow through on everything that he's laid out, the plan that he's laid out for America. So that's it.
All right. Falana Williams, everyone.
Thank you, Falana. Keep being great, Queen.
Entertainment and politics.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Queen.
See ya.
Have a good one. Thank you, guys.
Falana Williams.
Falana.
She did, Falana, you know, Falana. Listen, man. I ain't gonna lie. This is like the year of the black woman. There's no denying the effect that black women have imprinted on this world. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm gonna give it up. You know, yeah. Black men, we gotta be motivated. Because I'm motivated now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I'm
like
about to motivate my kings.
It.
Listen, I told you I'm about to do the King's March. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Good. It's holding us accountable, pushing us, and reclaiming our throne.
Yeah. No. And you know, black women will help you do it.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? Look. And y'all gonna organize
black women
it.
Will
I'm calling
it.
Y'all gonna
yeah, that's
this.
The problem. I'm gonna call it and y'all gonna organize it.
Gonna,
but
listen,
that's all right.
Because
it's
for
a good
teamwork.
Cause. Teamwork it's for a good cause. And you know, like you said, there are a lot of powerful black women doing a lot of great things across this nation.
And I salute y'all and support you. You know what? I should have asked Philana. You know, about my I don't get it. Because she was in the room as we watched the debate.
She was.
Between Reverend Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler.
Miss Loeffler.
And she kept referring to Warnock as radical liberal Raphael Warnock. I think she said this over and over again. So I don't get what the hell a radical liberal is. I think it's like, that's like a, what you call it? What is the
double
word?
Entendre?
It's not a double entendre. It is an oxymoron. Like, I don't see how you can be both.
Well, you know what? I decided.
What have you decided? Tell me
that I'm claiming it.
You're
and it's all right with me. Because at first I was like, I know what she's trying to do. She's talking to her base, right?
That's
and
true.
She's trying to scare people, and she wants to use the defund police thing, and they have decided that radical liberal is a buzz term and like a danger zone for Democrats and you know, for people who may be their opponents. And so I get it, and it's disingenuous. It's actually disrespectful because he is Reverend Raphael Warnock, and he is the pastor of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's church. And I don't think I heard her say that many times. But she kept on going on and on with this narrative, and you were like, I see what she's trying to do.
I see what she's trying to do, but I'm just saying, like, the term to me is like saying you're a skinny, fat person.
No. So I decided to claim it.
Okay.
Because I am liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I am very liberal. I believe in the liberal cause. I guess I'm probably more progressive, whatever that means.
Yeah, I think I'm more progressive than.
But liberal is a thing. You can be liberal, someone who is not conservative, right? Someone who believes in freedom and the right to choose. So we don't want to stop people from choosing their right to have abortions and things like that. Like, as a liberal person, you believe in a society where people have more rights and more freedoms and what have you. And guess what? I'm radical. So I'm a radical liberal.
That's what I just don't get.
Because if you're a liberal.
I think liberal is the step before progressive, right?
It probably is.
Okay. So saying that you're radical progressive makes more sense. But just if there's a stage after liberal, then why would you use radical liberal and not just the term progressive?
Well, I'm
it doesn't really make sense.
Then I'm a radical progressive
liberal. That makes more sense. Because
I'm a radical progressive liberal.
I don't.
There you go.
Nah.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I get what she was doing.
I get what she was doing, but I'm just trying to say it don't really make sense.
But guess what? I claim it because I am liberal.
I'm not liberal. I'm progressive.
I'm progressive too, but I claim all of it. Because anything that allows me to choose what to do with my body, anything that gives me as a woman the right to vote, the right to work,
are those things
any
radical?
Of those things. Well, that's what I'm saying. I want all those things, and I want to defund the police. So I'm radical.
But defunding, and I'm liberal. See, the thing is that I don't think you're
it's
radical.
Not even that radical.
None
that's,
of these
don't
things
even
are,
get
that's
us started
to
today
the
on how defund defunding the
police
is not that radical. Abolish the police, radical.
That's
as
radical because we're getting rid of a whole institution that's put in place to address a problem that we know happens in the world. So I get that. I think, you know, there's a process to where you have to really get that in some mind. But when you say defund, it means take away funds. Take away some of the funds, and then you reallocate it to communities and to situations and to organizations and to positions that are directly impacting our communities right now. That makes sense. And if you so caught up in a term that you don't care about what it means, then that means you're not really here to be on the side.
A radical liberal?
Exactly. A radical liberal.
Well, listen, Raphael Warnock says that he's not trying to defund police.
Yeah,
it's
really
so
agree.
Sad to watch the Democrats
because they have
try
to
their best to capitulate to these people who are not with
and
us.
And this is why we need something
and
different.
Say things,
and I'm going to keep saying that. Look,
yeah, we do.
At this point, right, it's not like people say the less of the best, the two evils. It's not that. It's the best option that we have. When one of those options actually have to be in place anyway.
Right.
So we have to pick the best option. And although we know that we're not going to get all the things we need from the best option, we are aware that we can get some of the things we need from the best option. But as we vote for the best option,
we have to
be working on putting a whole nother structure in place that completely represents the needs of our people.
Well, I don't think anything is going to completely, because once Negroes get involved with it and all of us with our own ideas and ideologies and whatever take over it, right? There's going to be a lot of compromise. That's what happens in any situation. But the fundamental values and the moral fiber, the moral fiber, the wordsmithing, this is one of our things, is trying to say the right words. That is what I believe. That's the thing I want, is that the foundation be something that I know is for our best interest. And then we get to work on outside of that. Well, you know, this can't be the agenda this year, so we're going to work on these two things, and then next year we'll get to something else. I think people want that type of intersectionality, but for the Black community. And it is our time, I think, to do that. So you know what? I'm a radical, progressive, liberal, whatever the hell y'all want to call me. And I'll say it again, and I'm going to say it again and again and again. Y'all can call defunding the police, pin the tail on the donkey. You can call it bless mama's cows. I don't care. What I care about, though, is go get that money and give it to mental health services, educational services, housing, food. That's what we need.
That's what we need, man. So call it what you want. Like you said, just get it done.
Right.
Just get it done. But still, I don't get radical liberal. Call me a radical progressive. Call me radical.
Just call me radical.
Yeah, I like radical. You know what I'm saying? That works for me.
We agreed about something. Oh, that's good. We agree. You don't, men don't do like this. Like this wasn't it. No, like no high five. Yeah, you got to do like this.
It's like, yeah, you see?
Some men. There's some men still do.
I mean, to each his own. It's just not, it's not my thing. Okay. I'm not the
patty cake type?
Yeah, that's not my thing. Okay. I mean, nothing against the people who's their thing. It's not my thing. Before we go to the next segment and have our special guest join, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors.
That's how we own it!
So, you know, a lot of people get a lot of credit for doing great work in Georgia, and they all deserve it. Obviously, Stacey Abrams, incredible organizer. She took a loss and turned it into power on the ground for the presidential election, being involved in helping to ensure that people register to vote. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that she, you know, used her resources to get to the polls. And so that's incredible. But you know how we love to talk about the folks who work on the ground, who
that's literally our job.
Focus on people who are in communities that most folks won't touch, places people won't go. And one person that I know has been doing that for a very, very long time, and especially in this election. And as far as I'm concerned, she doesn't get enough credit and enough acknowledgement for the apparatus, the operation that is on the ground in Georgia,
that's right,
where many people believe in, love, and follow, because I follow her as one of my leaders, and that is Ms. Helen Butler of Georgia Coalition for the People's Agenda.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing today, Ms.
Well, hello there, Tamika. Glad to see you all. Glad to be with you.
So, Ms. Helen, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Where are we?
Well, as you know, Tamika, we're out in the streets because you've been there with us.
That's right.
We've been in Georgia across the state, not just in Metro Atlanta. We're in Athens, Albany, Savannah, Augusta, Macon, LaGrange. We're everywhere. We are down in Clay County, places that people have never heard of, Randolph County. We're getting across the state to really get people back engaged because, as our theme says, let's do it again. We've got do it again for the January 5th election, two critical Senate seats. But we also have a statewide public service commission, means so much to the communities that we serve, the Black community. Because we are so severely impacted by a lot of things that happen in the community, and we've got to turn out at record numbers.
Yeah. So what are you hearing from folks on the ground? Do you feel like they know what they have to do, or is it a whole process? Because I know you were with us or we were with you when we were trying to get folks to go to the polls for the presidential election. And it's a lot of work. It's hard, especially when talking to Black men. It is really, really difficult. So what are you experiencing now? Are people getting the importance of these local seats?
Well, some are getting it, and some are realizing that they have election fatigue. We have really been talking about elections since March, and we're now in December. And really to think about elections during this season, when usually people are thinking about family, enjoying family, doing things with the children, taking a vacation, what have you. But this time it's different. COVID is still here. People are struggling, as you know. People are worried about my rent. Am I going to be evicted? Will I be able to still find a job next year? What kind of health care am I having? So while they are concerned about those issues, we're out in the street telling them, yeah, that's why it's important that you go vote January 5th, because all of those issues that are impacting your life right now means that some elected official can give you relief and really return your money. A lot of people think that Donald Trump signed the checks for the stimulus, but it's their taxpayer dollars that are coming back to them. They have to understand that. They have to understand that elected officials are making these policies and that either help them or hurt them.
The energy that you have is like a young person, you know, and you're on the front, you're on the front lines in the streets, and you've been doing it for over 15 years. What keeps you motivated to do this work?
Well, what I'm motivated by is young people like you all, people that are really the future, the present and the future, because right now you all exhibit the desire to help the community, to be there, to make a difference. And I just get energy from you all. I got to keep up my energy to keep up with you. I can't be sitting down. And the other thing that really gives me energy and hope, it's because I work with Dr. Lowry. He was 93 when he died here, and he was still engaged at 93. I mean, he wasn't out openly in the public as much, but we have meetings every Tuesday from 12 to 2. He'd give us strategies to talk about things we should be doing. He'd say, yeah, that's a great way to do it. You know, it that, you know, with him still being engaged at that age, I want to still be as engaged as he was. People that have given their lives, their whole lives, to making life better for us, then the least I can do is carry on that legacy. And that's what gives me energy to carry on.
We really do appreciate your work. And, you know, I see you out there talking about the issues that matter, and people respect that. You understand the issues around police accountability. I've, you know, heard you talking about education, which is obviously one of the key concerns for you, and economic development. And so you're the type of organizer that I think we all need to follow and be and walk in your footsteps. So thank you so much for being on with us today, my son. You may want to say something because I've talked, you know, the whole time. I love Miss Butler.
So I love Miss Butler too, man. You know, her, like, her energy is radiant. When we went and we were canvassing with her, she is a bunch of young people, and she had the most energy out there.
Yeah.
You know, she was organizing everybody and smiling and taking the pictures and getting everybody just organized. And, you know, her energy is contagious, man. When I look at your resume, see how you made the transition from corporate to the movement. Like, I just want to know, like, what inspired that move?
Well, my brother was the state conference president of the NAAC for 12 years before he died. And so I first joined that after I retired from corporate America to really just work with him on the voter fund project, the NAACP voter fund project. And so I had always been, you know, with him, you know, I'd help him with his speeches, but then he got me in to this situation, doing civic engagement work. And I met Dr. Lowry, Reverend James Orange, if no one ever knew him, one of the top lieutenants for Dr. King. They brought me over to work with them, and I've been here ever since. But it was a natural transition working with people. In corporate America, I was a VP of human resources, So I had to deal with different kinds of people. And here it is the same thing, dealing with people.
Well, we want to say thank you and thank your brother for bringing you to this space so that we've been blessed enough to get your energy and get your expertise and get what you bring to this world. So once again, us as street politicians, we want to thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Ms. Butler.
And come back to Georgia.
We'll see you in Georgia in just a few days.
She's dope. But she's dope. She's just dope. Her energy, when we was in Atlanta, you know, the way that she just interacted, which is dope. And then you listen to her, and then you just see the work that she's put in over the years.
Yeah, no, she's a real organizer, one that a lot of people can learn from, as I said. And it's the same thing with me. You know, a lot of people, because I have a platform and I'm known in some spaces, they will try to give me credit for work that I didn't do. And I'm always saying, no, that's actually, it was not me who, you know, whatever the issue may be. And the same thing with Ms. Helen, there are people who take a lot of credit and take up a lot of space. But a woman like Ms. Helen and Latasha Brown and others, again, Stacey Abrams, these are some of the individuals who are really getting things done. And people need to acknowledge their people need to acknowledge their presence. So we just have to make sure that we use our platform to put forth do the work.
Street politicians is for the little guy, for the person who doesn't get the real, you know, the celebration. You know, the accolades that they actually deserve. And we want to utilize our platform because we've been those people, you know.
We are still those people.
But, you know, it's,
it, they have the, no shade, have our moment.
No shade. No
we have
shade,
our moment.
But we here. Yeah, so I still don't agree about the allyship.
You decided to bring that back up now.
Yeah, you know, because we're coming to the end of our show and we talk about the things that we don't agree on.
you are laughing.
And this happens to be one of those things. It's millions of things.
Because you're wrong. But, you know, that's okay.
Listen, we're not going to always agree, as you see. I'm not going to always be right, but I usually am right. And she might not always be wrong, but she's usually wrong.
Yeah, right.
But we will always be authentic.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks for joining, Street Politicians. That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Good show.
You messed up something.
No, I didn't mess up anything.
You did.
How?
You did.
That's how we own it!